African-American women are among the hardest working people in the United States, more likely to be part of the workforce than women of any other group. They're also voting in large numbers, starting their own businesses, and steadily gaining more education.
That's according to a new report from the Domestic Workers Alliance and the Institute for Women's Policy Research. It examined the status of black women in the U.S. and found that despite gains in employment, education, and civic engagement, they're not seeing economic gains.
Chandra Childers joins us now. She's a senior research scientist at the Institute for Women's Policy Research and one of the authors of this new report. Chandra, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Well, one of your findings in this report that stood out is how much African-American women are working. How does their workforce participation compare with other groups?
Well, only of all the largest racial ethnic groups of women, African-American women, along with women of two or more races, have the highest level of labor force participation. All other groups of women have much lower levels of labor force participation.
And what types of jobs are some of the most common? I know it's hard to generalize too much, but what are some of the most common sectors that black women are working in?
Actually, that is one of the key factors that we found in looking at levels of inequality between, for example, the earnings of black women and women overall and with white men. So a large portion of women are really concentrated into service sector occupations. Many of them are in healthcare occupations, healthcare support occupations, and those tend to be jobs that have some of the lowest pay of all jobs. So, you know, here we're talking about things like nursing, psychiatric and home health aides, food servers. We're talking about also in areas like child care, personal and home care aides. So these are the types of jobs that black women tend to be really overrepresented in. And these are also jobs that tend to pay really low wages and have workers with higher than would be expected levels of poverty.
And when we look at the overall picture, how are African-American faring in the economy compared to other groups?
If we're looking in terms of earnings, so African-American women, if you compare all groups of women, their earnings, and again, we use white men since they're the largest group in the labor market, we compare them to white men. So white women would earn 77% of what white men earn. Black women would earn just 65% of white men's earnings, and that's nationally. We did find a lot of differences by state, and so in states, for example, like Louisiana, black women earn less than half of white men's earnings. So you wind up with much lower levels of income, despite greater increases in education, despite high labor force participation rates, and you also wind up with almost a quarter of black women falling below the poverty line.
And then at the same time as we're seeing lower salaries, lower incomes for African-American women, they're more likely to be a main or the main source of income in their households. Can you talk about that?
Yes, definitely. We defined a breadwinner as either a single mother with children under age 18, so she's providing for a child, or a married mother who provides 40% or more of household income. And what we found is that among African-American women with children under age 18, 80% are breadwinners. So the incomes that black women make, 80% of women with children under age 18, are either the sole or a key income provider for their households. And one of the in this other research that we've done looking at this, if, for example, we were to close the wage gap between black women or all women, if we close the wage gap between women and men with the same level of education and working the same number of hours, we could actually cut poverty for working women in half, and we could lift more than 2.5 million children above poverty.
Now, focusing on education for a moment, you've mentioned that educational levels for black women has been going up. What kind of changes are we seeing?
Between 2004 and 2014, black women's the number of black women with a bachelor's degree or more increased by 23%. And so that was the highest rate of increase among any group of women.
Is that starting to translate into different jobs and higher incomes, even if they're not catching up at this point?
Now, yes, black women, you do see black women throughout in different occupations. You see black women in better paying occupations. However, they do tend to earn less than their counterparts. And it's that they are disproportionately concentrated in low-wage service jobs, not that they're exclusively employed in those jobs. You do have, you know, black women. The range of earnings of black women, it's not as wide as it is for, say, white Americans, for white men and white women. It's more truncated, but you do have some black women in, you know, upper middle class. There's, you know, some women in a range of occupations, but again, it's not as wide. They don't have as many different occupations as you would see, for example, say, white women.
One other measure that I thought was interesting, a little less directly economically related, but civic engagement and participation in the political process. How do African-American women stand up there?
And with this report, we looked at data going through the 2012 election. And in 2008 and in 2012, black women had the highest rates of voter participation. But even if outside of voting, if you look at political activity, at movement to bring social change and bring improvement to our communities, black women historically and today continue to be very active in trying to bring about change and in trying to get policies that would benefit our families and communities writ large. Not just black communities, but all families and communities.
We're talking to Chandra Childers with the Institute for Women's Policy Research about a new report on African-American women in the United States, their work, their education, and their economic outcomes. So, Chandra, we have what sounds like a pretty good recipe, education going up, civically engaged group of people here, a lot of workforce participation, doing a lot of work, but as your report says, not translating into higher wages, staying in lower wages. What would it take to take all those positives and then start to see those economic outcomes improve?
Well, I think a couple of things. One, you know, talking about the jobs that black women are in, that the particular occupations and the industries that they work in, that accounts for a large share of that wage gap. So that would really require us to begin to value those jobs in the way that they should be valued. When we think about healthcare support jobs, when we think about, you know, to think of specific child care workers, nursing and home health aides, these are jobs that are important to our society. They're jobs that the healthcare aide jobs, for example, those are jobs that are projected to grow over time. So we're going to add more of those jobs. We're going to need more workers. So we need to properly value those jobs. Those should not be low-wage jobs. Those should not be jobs where working full-time year-round, you could still wind up living in poverty, you and your family. So we would need to properly value those jobs. But in addition to that, even, again, across the occupational spectrum, across jobs, women workers generally and black women in particular tend to earn less than their male counterparts. And so, you know, in those instances, closing that gender wage gap, having policies like pay transparency, enforcing anti-discrimination laws, making sure that we're holding employers accountable. One major factor we found was unionization. Black women who are unionized have higher earnings than black women who are not. And so in right-to-work states, those right-to-work laws are also damaging for black women workers in addition to all workers. So those are just some policies, you know, being transparent in the policies for hiring, for job assignment, for pay, and for promotions. Those are some things that could really begin to make a difference.
On the unionization side, I mean, the trends overall seem to be, or have been, down for unions for people all across the United States. Do you see that as something that could change?
We see that black women tend to be more active in unions, but you're right, unions overall are down and they're declining. But part of that is because we do have a great deal of for example, in right-to-work states, those right-to-work laws, they do not allow unions to really be competitive, and they don't allow workers to collectively bargain in a way that they could be as successful as in years before. So I think really allowing workers that right to collectively bargain and enforcing the laws that guarantee them those rights, I think those are things that we might could begin to see some change. Now, I don't know how much we could ever turn back that tide, but I do think we could definitely make progress if unions weren't facing the level of opposition that they face.
Very briefly, Chandra, as we wrap up, what would be the one biggest change that could see these numbers start to improve over the next few years?
I would say the biggest things we could do is, again, raise the minimum wage, get rid of the sub-minimum wage, and really begin to value the jobs at the lower wage jobs that workers are in.
Chandra, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That was Chandra Childers, senior research scientist at the Institute for Women's Policy Research. She's co-author of the report we've been talking about. It's called The Status of Black Women in the United States.